This is Mandy Lee, and you are listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Jordano Diablo.
Welcome to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Jordano Diablo.
This week we're going to be talking about a very specific thing. Mama always said El Jordano is like a box of chocolates. It's full of fat. Joining us this week on the show is filmmaker John Nix.
Hi, nice to be here.
John, why don't you love me?
Dude, there's so many trigger warnings right now.
Do you just want me to start? Okay.
Yeah, John, why do you hate Forrest Gump?
There are a lot of reasons to hate Forrest Gump. I think my main two reasons are it's a movie that is both judgmental and kind of full of hate for its audience while trying to get away with pandering to them at the same time. So it doesn't really have anything. It's a movie without any reason to exist. Like, it doesn't want anyone to see it.
Right.
Like, it's just saying fuck you to its target audience, basically.
And its target audience is middle America. Yeah. I mean, like the...
And baby boomers specifically. Yeah. And then my second problem with it is like the entire message of the movie. It punishes literally any character that has any sense of passion or goal or want, and then it rewards a doofus that falls into situations that benefit him, and then acts like, oh, this is a great message. This isn't cynical and fucking awful at all.
By the way, he's got an IQ of 75.
75, and he is your humble narrator. I do agree with you about the pandering thing. Honestly, you know, I think the movie would have been a lot better if just every time something happened that Forrest was a witness to and alluded to in his own retarded kind of way, he just winked at the audience. My great-granddaddy was in the Ku Klux Klan. Wink.
Well, and then, like, all right, so they introduce that part of it. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, like, if you remember, he's talking to a black woman while he's telling that part of the story. And then he's like, what was the, he says something about, oh yeah, they dressed up like a bunch of sheets or spooks or something. I'm like, how the fuck, like, just because you have a 75 IQ does not give you the right to be a racist piece of shit.
Yeah. Well, and he's also named after Nathan Bedford Forrest, a Confederate hero. And then it just kind of tosses it off as like, sometimes people do things that don't make sense.
Oh, like, yeah. And just, on top of that, he lives on a fucking plantation.
I'm still confused as to why they had so many travelers at their plantation. They lived in the middle of nowhere in Alabama.
Yeah, like Greenboro or something like that.
Greenboro, Alabama.
I'm going to act like I don't know.
Yeah, but so as far as everybody that has a sense of passion gets punished, I'm a little confused by that. So basically, it's... Like when Bubba shows a little bit of promise, he gets killed. Lieutenant Dan gets his legs cut off. But what was his big, you know, his big show of passion that had him deserve to get punished?
It's everyone around him pretty much. I mean, Jenny wants to escape her small town and get away from her horrible family, and like the movie just tortures her. If it was just her scenes in the movie, it would just be a horror movie. But with Lieutenant Dan, like, I mean, he came from a long heritage, and he wanted it to be meaningful. And I'm fine with like him becoming disillusioned with the armed services and going like, oh no, it's not all just medals, and it's ruined my life, kind of like as far as the fallout of everything that came from it. But like the movie is just totally optimistic or indifferent to it. Like, it doesn't give a fuck about Lieutenant Dan really. Like, if it was concerned with him, it would just end up being the born on the 4th of July.
So, with Gary Sinise.
With
not,
Gary Sinise, yeah.
Not Tom Cruise.
Which might be a better movie. I'd probably watch that movie.
I would, too. I like Gary Sinise.
Now that we brought up the actors, do you have a problem with the acting in the movie at all?
No. I mean, I think it's stacked with really good actors. I just think that they're not given much to do. Like, I love Michael K. Williamson, the guy that plays Bubba, but he's given two or three monologues about shrimp, and then he dies.
Who plays Bubba?
I think it's Michael K. Williamson.
I don't think so. The guy who played Omar?
No, that's,
no, that's Michael Wait. Williams.
And Michael K. Williams is the guy who plays Omar on The Wire. And like we're all like
fact checks.
Go to the phones,
dude. Yeah. Last night when we were talking about it, somebody was like, "When did Coffee and Cigarettes come out?" I was like 2002, and they're like, "Whoa,
man, just had it in the holster."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had oddly looked it up a couple days before I was talking about that movie, but I was just like, oh, 2002.
Sorry. McKelty Williamson?
Oh, okay.
Either way. So, he's a great character actor. He's in so many good movies. I mean, he's in Con Air, he's in Heat. He's in this amazing movie, Miracle Mile, from the 80s that no one talks about. Like, love more than most movies. Just like he's not given anything to do.
I'm going to stop you right there. Con Air is a good movie.
Yeah,
entertaining.
It's entertaining as fuck, and it's terrible schlock, and it's great.
The cast is fantastic in that movie.
It is. Yeah.
Chappelle is in it.
Yeah, it's like the Chappelle. I mean, I'm gonna leave Nicolas Cage out of that great, you know, cast or whatever. But there's Danny Trejo's in it. There's a ton of good people.
John Malkovich is in
it. Yeah, exactly. I mean, not John Leguizamo.
I think he might be in it.
Is it him or Freddie Rodriguez? It's one of the two.
I don't know.
Freddie Prinze Jr. is in it.
Paul Walker.
Yeah, Paul Walker's in it. Freddie Prinze, the corpse of Freddie Prinze is in it. He gets dropped off the plane in the second act. That movie exists and I'm fine with it. How many times have you seen Forrest Gump and under what circumstances?
Oh, God. I've probably seen it probably 20 or 25 times. Right? Yeah. I mean, like, because it used to be on TV all the time growing up. And I used to watch it with my grandparents or whatever. And, like, it was fine when I was a kid. But once I hit, like, 12 or 13, started getting taste, I started just going, like, I think this movie's being sarcastic, but it's not really sarcastic. It's not actually being honestly sarcastic.
Well, I was telling Jeremy when we watched the first 25 minutes of it that I think it should be classified as a science fiction movie because she tells him to run and he can't run and then he starts running. Like, what else would you categorize that as? It's like a science fiction epic is what it is.
Do you believe in miracles, Jordan? It's a miracle. I was running.
The greatest line in that movie from him, delivered from him.
See, I feel like the best line is when his mom fucks the principal from the school, and then he comes out onto the porch, and then Forrest just starts making like sex sounds at him angrily.
It's so weird, man. It's so weird.
It's super out of place. Like, I feel like that scene doesn't belong in the rest of the movie.
Well, and like another thing nobody ever fucking talks about is like how Jenny used to come over his house and like sleep in his bed when they were 8 years old. I mean, anyone, nobody, like nothing. That's kind of fucking weird, is it not?
Well. You know, it was established through retard lens early on in the movie. That's the thing that, you know, upon a further viewing of it that bothered me about it was that he takes all these terrible things and puts it through this innocent lens that he has, and somehow it doesn't make it any easier to swallow. And I think they were trying to set a specific tone there, and it failed miserably. At least, maybe I'm just too jaded to... accept it for what it's supposed to be, but you know, she got molested by her dad, so
she turns into a shitbag the rest of her life.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the narrative that they go with. I mean, it seems
the movie is like so clearly misogynistic on pretty much every level. Like every single one of her choices is just like, oh, women the whole time. Right.
Almost said women are like a box of chocolates. The good ones have cream already in them.
I like your Forrest Gump. You should just go. You should roll with that on stage all the time.
Just stay in character.
Yeah. Better than my other characters. what I've done lately. But I think you're right there, especially because it's... you know, Sally Field is basically like the old guy at AA that spouts aphorisms at you until she's blue in the face, and that's all she is. And, you know, she fucks the principal to get her son into public school, which it's not even a very good horn job.
She's Mama, what's vacation? Mm-hmm. She's like, that's where you go away and never come back. Liar? Like, you fucking liar? The movie is filled with terrible people.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's based around a retard.
It's a lot of people placating each other. And I mean, even to what you were just saying, where you might just be too jaded. I mean, I think everyone might just be too jaded for it at this point. Like, I think that this is like a perfect example of like pre-9/11
right.
kind of filmmaking, where it's just like, oh, it's fine. Even when it's bad, it's kind of cool. It'll work out. You'll get magic legs one day. Yeah. Like, it all worked out for the best. And like, we're now, I think we're all just like, ugh, everything's fucked. We're all
doomed. Anybody with half a brain knows that we're fucked. But no, you said he brought up word filmmaking, which we talked about briefly last night. It was a Robert Zemeckis movie, and I'm a huge Back to the Future fan, and
yeah,
so are you.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, when I was growing up, Back to the Future was probably my favorite movie.
Yeah,
for, I mean, the majority of like my childhood. It sucks. I like Robert Zemeckis a lot, and it's just like there's like this whole chunk of his career like where it's just garbage after garbage. like nothing is good. Like Polar Express, and then it's just like. I don't know. Oh, God.
Do you think it's Tom Hanks' fault?
I don't think Tom Hanks knows what this movie was about. Because if you look into what he was talking about, as far as the message of the movie, he said, this is about learning to love your kids no matter what.
Well.
Unless he's referring to the fact that Haley Joel Osment has AIDS and no one wants to talk about it. Because he probably has AIDS.
Yeah, he probably has AIDS.
Well, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to transfer from mother to child. I mean, there is a possibility that he's AIDS-free. And he's grown up a little bit. And it appears to take place in a time before, you know, you could throw money at AIDS and it would go away. So I think he's fine.
Okay, well, then we can go with that then.
Yeah, but...
Well, his mom still died of AIDS and his dad's still a retard, so he's probably not going to be a well-adjusted human being is all I'm saying. They live on a plantation together, alone. Like, you tell me how that's going to work out.
He's rich. He's yeah. very rich.
And I don't know what that means.
It means that, look, when you have that much money, like when, like... Oh, he bought stock in this fruit company, and then everything is taken care of, and he's set. He's set for life.
So he can be an idiot through his entire life.
Yeah, he can just throw money at people, and, you know, he still has a couple of people that, you know, care about his well-being to make sure he's like, are you spending this money properly? And, you know, he seems like he wants to be a dad. Maybe that's what Tom Hanks is talking about. It's like he's... experienced all this to learn how to be a dad.
Yeah, but I don't think he was engaged enough with anything that happened to him to get anything out of anything.
Didn't he win an Oscar for it?
I think he did.
Yeah, he won one for Philadelphia and then that.
I think he's won more than that even.
No, I just, those two were like, they weren't, I don't know if they were back to back, but they were like very close to each other because like Philadelphia was like maybe 92.
Tom Hanks plus AIDS equals Oscar.
That's very true.
So speaking of him being all right, let's talk about the Forrest Gump canon. Because there is a sequel to Forrest Gump. It just wasn't made into a movie.
Right.
The novelist that wrote Forrest Gump, and the book is way, way angrier, and it's way more clearly satire, and mm-hmm. it's very, like, fuck you to everything in it, which the movie didn't do at all. And he was so mad about that he wrote a sequel to it called Gump & Co., where... everything in his life comes undone the same way that he kind of just fell into all that
really?
Stuff. He just falls into problems and he just becomes like the story of Job. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if he's going to end up being okay. I haven't read the book, so I don't know.
It's out there if you'd like to read it. Do you think one of the problems with the movie is it wasn't a faithful adaptation to the book and they just... put all the problems that Forrest experienced onto Jenny?
Well, no, I mean, the book, he falls into stuff, but it's more about, like, oh, look, this is the way life works. Like dipshits rule, and then like, people that try really hard to get ahead in life, like, just get punished for even trying. Like, so it's a super cynical book, And I think the problem is that the movie's just not for anybody. Like, I think the movie is, like, is trying to be this, like, clean-cut, pandery audience, like, Fried Green Tomatoes type stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it's dealing with this very cynical material that it's, like, it doesn't seem to be aware that it's cynical. Like, it feels like it was made by a person that didn't understand this source material at all.
Is it Zemeckis' fault, or is it the screenwriter, or is it just Tom Hanks being too earnest and... you know,
let's not blame that man. I love Tom Hanks. But love for Tom
Hanks. Yeah, no, I mean, I think Tom Hanks is fine. I mean, and at the same time, like, you know, actors have to work with what they're given. So
that's
true. You have to trust that the people are going to know what they're doing once they get into the editing room or when they were writing it. I mean, it might be the writer. It might be Robert Zemeckis. I think it might be Robert Zemeckis because I feel like Robert Zemeckis doesn't understand and I don't think he's interested in people. As shown by the fact that, like, all he does is make CGI movies anymore, except for The Walk. So okay. The Walk was, like, the first movie with real people that he's made in forever.
I mean, I think the thing that struck me immediately when I knew it was a Zemeckis movie was, you know, after the first scene made me angry, where it's like he's talking to a stranger at the bus stop, which I hate.
Yeah, that is, for you and me who've ridden the bus quite a bit, that's fucking awful.
He's just immediately insufferable for you.
Yeah, it's just, do you want a cigarette? Shut up.
But, I actually had a girl, just side note, at the bus stop 2 weeks ago, walks up and she's like, I have my headphones in. So immediately that means leave me the fuck alone.
Mm-hmm.
And she, hey, and like trying to get my attention, waving at me and shit. And I like look over at it, like did a total dick, like corner of my eye, look at her. I'm like, yeah. She's like, you got any chapstick? If I did, you wouldn't fucking be using it anyway. Like, why? Who asked that? Like, I understand I live at 25th and Denison, but like, what person in their right mind is like, hey, can I borrow your chapstick?
You don't have a communal chapstick?
I do not.
Oh, man.
You're not with it.
I guess I'm not hood enough for a communal chapstick.
Yeah, you just bite the tip of it off and then you just use it.
Oh, God.
That's exactly how it works. I mean, sometimes you encounter somebody who's like, I just smoked a bunch of crack and my lips look like shit. But I forgot to bring the chapstick. Maybe this fine gentleman, he's got great lips, dick sucking lips, bet he has some chapstick.
This is now the second week in a row you've commented on my lips in a sexual way. I'm appreciating it. I'm not offended by any means. So the guy who wrote it, his name's Eric Roth, and he, I'm just gonna go down his IMDb, like, see if what he wrote. Nope, don't care. He wrote Curious Case of Benjamin Button. He wrote The Good Shepherd. He wrote Munich. He wrote Ali. Yeah, he doesn't have a great track record as far as like writing a good movie goes.
As a Jew, I don't think I'm allowed to say that Munich is a bad movie. So we'll give him that one.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, you're right. I mean,
oh, he wrote The Postman. He wrote The Postman.
Kevin Costner.
Yes.
Postman?
Oh
my. Oh God.
That was after Forrest Gump.
Do I want to talk about my my status as a Kevin Costner apologist? Because The Postman's a bad movie, but like, it's trying really hard.
Anytime somebody talks shit on Kevin Costner, I just like, and it's like the one thing I'm like, Mr. Brooks, dude. Watch Mr. Brooks.
See, I just yell at people about Waterworld and how great it is.
Well, it is great. People don't appreciate that movie the way they should.
Tom Hanks plus AIDS. Kevin Costner plus baseball.
Yeah, there you go.
For the Love of the Game was excellent.
And Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams is excellent.
No, Dennis Quaid was Bull Durham, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I feel like there's still another Kevin Costner baseball movie. I think there's a third one.
Let's not say Kevin Costner in sports because the movie they made about the Browns was
Draft Day.
Yeah. Like that movie would have been okay minus the love story. Like if you take any of that shit out of there, it's like, oh, this is interesting. It's not how it works, but this is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole thing did not interest me a bit, but. You know, they always
Concussion
do
doesn't fucking interest me. Is that what that movie's called? The Will Smith movie?
Oh, Concussion, yeah. Well, I haven't watched it, but I've watched Head Games, the like 3-hour documentary by the guy that did Hoop Dreams about it, and it's just like one of the most devastating documentaries ever.
Yeah, I'm going past that.
Well, the problem with Concussion is, as far as what I've heard, again, I haven't watched it, but from what I've heard, like they solve the problem in the movie, Which is bullshit. Like, yeah, it should be, like, if you want to make a movie about a problem, like, create a call to action. Don't just, like, give the audience catharsis and just go, like, well, problem solved. You don't have to worry about it. You shouldn't feel heavy at all when you leave.
I think one of the problems with Forrest Gump, though, is that it does the same thing with every single, like, conflict in that movie. It's neatly wrapped up, and there's no damage done to our humble protagonist. He goes on about his day.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, well, he's almost like sociopathically unempathetic to everyone around him. I mean, he only gets his fortune because he's too dumb to bring his boat into shore during a hurricane, and then all of his competition is wiped out and he creates a monopoly on the shrimping business.
Yep. Yeah, I think after Forrest Gump, people were ready for George H.W.
I don't know. Like, I'm starting to think, is this movie about, is this like a precursor to Donald Trump? It's like everything you're kind of describing is like, he's ran a monopoly. He's a fucking moron.
He lacks empathy.
I still think Forrest Gump is racist. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are plenty of good arguments for that, too.
Yeah.
But Bubba was his friend.
That he let die. Because he's fucking racist.
Well, the thing about him and Bubba is, like, Bubba's, like, the closest thing that he has to, like, an actual, like, motivation. Okay. Because everything else, he just kind of goes, like, well, and then I was done with that, and then I did this other thing. And, there doesn't need to be any thought process at all as far as his evolution of a character. But going down there and trying to get into the shrimping business is, like, the only thing in the movie that's cause and effect. Otherwise, it's kind of a bunch of little vignettes strung together. It's like a bunch of little episodes.
Yeah. I agree.
Do you think it would have worked better as a series of sketches?
Like, on SNL.
Yeah, instead of a movie, you have every week, what trouble will Forrest get into this week?
That would be way more entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, I would be fine with it if, like, every sketch ended with, like, all the other characters bludgeoning him to death. I'd be fine with that.
Well, why didn't anybody kill him? And like, are they just going based off the fact that, like, does he have, like, crazy retard strength? Is that why he beats up a couple people in the movie? Or, 'cause, I mean, dude, like, the guy, it's like he's got no brain, but he's got everything else going for him.
Well, I know in the book he was supposed to be this huge, like, 250-pound, like, 6'5", like, monster.
That's
man.
That's not Tom Hanks.
So, yeah. Well, weirdly, John Goodman was originally supposed to be cast as Forrest Gump when they were first starting to make the movie. Yeah.
That would have been good.
Do you think so? I don't know. I
think it would have been a completely different movie.
I love John Goodman. I just don't know how that would have played out.
I don't know. Like, Tom Hanks' dead eyes and John Goodman's dead eyes.
Oh, see, okay, we found the link. So Robert Zemeckis just wants a bunch of dead eyes.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
That's what it is.
Is that why he stopped working with Michael J. Fox?
God damn it.
Too soon?
too twitchy.
My grandfather had Parkinson's, thank you.
I mean, dude, my uncle killed himself 4 years ago. I mean, we if you want to...
I'm joking.
I know. I'm just saying, you want to... I mean, I don't give a shit.
My mother found love in the nursing home. She found a guy with Parkinson's and trigger finger. We all have Parkinson's jokes. Moving on.
Wow.
Yeah. but I want to focus more on how often you watched this with your grandparents when you were younger. Because I remember it being on TV all the time. That was my... Mm-hmm. I actually went and saw it in the theater, though.
I did, too.
My mother wanted to see it, so it was like, okay, we'll go. But yeah, it was on... It was basically TBS's... Before they found Tyler Perry sitcoms, they had Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
And so was this something that you just remember as being a constant in your life, sitting down with your grandparents to watch it, or was it just background while you guys did whatever else?
I think it was just kind of background. I mean, when I was growing up, I was always watching movies. Like, I was kind of unattended for the most part, so I would just throw stuff on, and it was just one of the VHSs that was in the house. So, I mean, I feel like a lot of people, like anyone our age, I think, like, the attachment to this movie would be pretty much just nostalgia.
What did I say to you last night?
I think if you threw it in front of, like, I think, like, if you showed this to, like, a 12-year-old now, I think that, like, they'd be like, eh. Like, I don't think that they would get it.
Yeah, I agree.
So...
I said that to him last night, though. I said, like, part of me hates it because, like, of everything we've just said, but, like, part of me loves it because it's one of my mom's favorite movies, and we always watched it, you know, like always watched it.
Yeah.
So it's like I have a love and hate for it, but.
You know, like a lot of, like my grandparents still will occasionally make up stewed tomatoes on toast with some wontons for a little bit of extra crunch because it was what they ate during the Depression. And they love it. It's terrible. It's objectively terrible. But they still love it.
That's like, I mean, dude, that's like borderline prison food.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, like a lot of people enact, they sell fried bologna at Swenson's.
Yeah. And at B-Spot.
I don't understand it. It's, that's not like something you eat when things are going great.
You chose this? But if you want to talk about like the nostalgia aspect of it, like the weird thing about the movie is it's basically like a mixtape for baby boomers of just like, oh, you remember that? Oh, you remember that? But then it kind of neuters all of it, which is like, oh, you like John Lennon? Oh, his like that big song that you always get choked up when you listen to it. That was just this fuck off line that he heard from like a 15 Minutes of Fame guy when he was on like the Tonight Show or whatever that scene is.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Elvis. It's the same thing with everyone else in the movie.
Nixon gets taken down by a phone call at late in the evening from a guy trying to get some sleep.
They got the CGI JFK saying he has to pee. It was JFK, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Was it JFK? Who says that? Or was it?
No, Forrest Gump
says,
LBJ.
I have to pee.
Yeah.
No, he said.
Almost drank me 25 Dr. Peppers.
Yeah. No, with LBJ, he showed him his buttocks.
Oh, that's right.
Which, you know, it's funny if you consider the fact that LBJ liked to show everybody his ding-dong, so. So, you know, the would have been a much different movie if the LBJ's response to seeing Forrest buttocks was to show off his ding-dong and then...
It's like, oh, yeah, show me this.
That would have been... Well, I mean, as far as one of the pros, like, all the crazy CG for the time, it would be, like, removing Dan, like, Lieutenant Dan's legs or, like, just making this all the old celebrity footage of faces, like, talk and look like it's talking. Like, all that stuff is really groundbreaking cool. So it would have been cool to see a crazy... LBJ CGI dick. Yeah. I feel like that would have been cool.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, every time you see in a deleted scene in a movie, like, we cut this out because we just decided to add a dick. It always looks terrible. Like, I haven't seen a good CGI dick. Is that something you can work on in your career?
Well, I mean, I think Zack Snyder nailed it with Watchmen.
Okay, you know, yeah. So, yeah. That was a pretty good dick, I will agree.
It wobbles real nice. Yeah. It's got a nice weight to it.
That's probably the only good thing Zack Snyder's done ever.
Are you talking about the dick or Watchmen?
Just the dick.
Just the dick.
Just
okay.
The dick. I don't really like Watchmen. It's boring.
I mean,
book's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the book's amazing. But, you know, they couldn't make that movie until 9/11 happened. Because otherwise nobody would have understood, like, oh, like, we all got attacked. Like, this can actually happen. So after 9/11, it was like, okay, now we can make a Watchmen movie because people understand this huge disaster that just happened. So
right on.
Yeah. I tried telling people that at work, and they don't like me anymore. So,
what was the response to it?
You know, they just looked at me like, we're talking about where we were on 9/11. We don't want to hear your stupid theory on why the Watchmen movie had to be made. But
here's a hot take on a movie that didn't do well that you probably didn't see.
But a guy has a blue dick in it.
Yeah, and the blue dick's amazing. There's a blue dick and Archie's cool. So let's see. We've established that Forrest Gump was in its time a nostalgia piece for baby boomers, and now it has become a nostalgia piece for our generation for that particular period of time, like the mid-90s, if I remember correctly. That's when it was, yeah. So does it have any other redeeming qualities? You know, the CG was good for its time. Tom Hanks and the rest of the actors are good. Is there anything else, like, worthy of even still talking about this movie?
Well, I don't know. Because, like, I mean, there are plenty of, like, performances that last. And I think there are movies that, like, can be carried by performances where, like, even if everything else doesn't age well, like, if it feels like it's, like, this is a real raw emotional thing, like, that can... buoy it for decades. But I just don't think that, like, I think all the actors are fine. Like, I think they're all great actors that have proven themselves. Like, there's no reason to insult any of them.
Right.
Know? Like, mm-hmm. Jenny's on House of Cards and everyone loves her. And, like, I'm stoked that she's, like, gotten this second wave in her career. It's awesome. But, like, it's just, I feel like it's like, really capable people that are kind of given nothing because either, like, their character is just punished for no reason in, like, three or four cutaway scenes. Or, like, they just have to act off Tom Hanks, who doesn't get... I mean, he's doing his... I mean, he's disappearing into that character, but he's just like, why? Like, I just don't feel like the movie has a life for much longer just because, like, I don't think it has anything to say, you know? Like, I don't think... Like, when you walk away from the movie...
It's very dated.
What are you going to do? You're just going to... Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Like, well, I think we've established what it is at this point. Remember this? That's it. That's all it is. Just remember this.
Yeah.
Remember mm-hmm. that. Remember this. And so it's just going to be like just basically a yearbook. And that's all it'll ever amount to. And I think I'm fine with that.
But I mean, really to focus, like one of the things that pisses me off the most about that fucking movie is Jenny. Like just that character and how she was, obviously it's not her fault. It's not the actress's mm-hmm. fault. Like, but she strings along a dude that's fucking retarded for like 20 fucking 30 fucking years, then doesn't see him. It's like, oh, hey, I want you to come back in my life. Oh, hey, that kid's yours. Oh, hey, I have AIDS. Bye. She's a shitbag.
Yeah, she's horribly written. She's written as this like flighty, emotional, crazy character that's just ruined and like she'll never be able to like get agency of her life again. And all she does is fall into abusive relationships over and over and over again. Yeah. And it's just like, it doesn't seem to have any respect at all for her her autonomy as a person, where it's just like, you can't make your own decisions at all. Like, here, let me take away all your toys.
That movie would have been way better had they ended it with somebody just fucking pushing her off when she's standing on the ledge of that building, just like, all right, movie's over. She's a piece of shit.
That's the thing. Like, the movie, like, borders on torture porn, but it's trying to be optimistic about it. And, like, I genuinely would be fine with it. Like, I would have been fine with, like, anything feeling like it has consequences or effects on anything
right,
else in it.
Right.
It's just a bunch of people wriggling around feeling bad and him just going, oh, that's how
and some
are.
Close calls and shit.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't make any sense. And it is just nostalgia, man. Like I grew up watching it with my parents and I mean
the narrative with Jenny is basically that you're doomed to repeat the abuse that's happened to you over and over and over again, and
that I can understand.
I mean, yeah, but you know, that's why I don't think she's like a bitch at all, because that's what her deal is, and I get that. It would be more interesting if she was able to overcome that and get through it, and it seems like the only time she does that in the movie is when she becomes a mom. And
which is also super condescending.
Yeah.
I mean, if people want to watch this movie, I feel like I would just tell them to watch Benjamin Button instead, because that movie's got a ton of problems. And I know most people don't think it's a good movie, but it's easily a better movie than Forrest Gump, like, because at the very least it's about something. Like, Benjamin Button's all about kind of accepting death, like, and just realizing that like everything kind of goes away and like that's the way it is and that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that its ideas are way, way clearer, but it kind of has the same structure of this, like, wandering guy that's observing all these different people that come in and out of his life. And, like, so if you want that feeling, like, go to that movie instead. Right. Like a B minus is better than an F.
For Forrest.
That's my name.
Forrest. I learned that on Sesame Street. That's another weird scene when he's watching fucking Sesame Street with his kid, and I'm like, who's learning more?
I don't think he learns. Existed at a time when... No, he obviously doesn't learn. The only thing he's like, basically, he really is like an addict that has just been stripped away of everything and thrown into AA, and all he has are the shit that the sponsor keeps feeding him, because that's what his mom is.
I feel like if you try to make this movie today, it would just be all of the other characters bitterly clicking through Facebook at 3 in the morning and seeing his success and just being like, that fucking guy.
Lots of angry faces on his status.
Yeah, that movie would not go over today, not even a little bit.
No, no, I don't think anyone would even touch it. I mean, if you look at all of the heartwarming type, the movies that are really trying to like be well-meaning that have come out recently, like every single one of them is bombed.
Yeah,
like people want, like it's like either the bad guys win or no, or everyone loses because they all just die. Like right. That's the mood that movies seem to be in right
that's
now.
That's the post 9/11.
Yeah, yeah. once we had Babel, it was all downhill from there. Yeah, it's either all just so sad all the time.
I can get down with that though.
My mama always said, "Life is like a box of chocolates. Give the white guy the one with the peanut butter in it so he can choke because people like to watch people suffer."
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. Why did we even try to watch that movie again?
Because we had to know. If those memories that we had of enjoying that movie were valid or not.
Were worth anything.
And I think they were, because we existed at a time before we had known that life is not like that. You can't just go around observing everything that goes around about you and come out okay.
Yeah.
You have to take a more active role in things. And, you know, when you're 12 or even, you know, up until just the point where you realize everything's bullshit when your hormones kick in. You know, that's an okay way to look at things, but
well, it's like they could have even taken it in the fact it was like they, like the one thing they could have done with him, that character is like, okay, well, like after all the times he's been stomped on by Jenny, they could show him heartbroken, but he's too stupid to be fucking heartbroken, so you lose that right there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they try to pretend. I mean, he, you know, it's like what you said, like he's kind of coming in and out, like trying to get her on and off for like 30 years.
Yeah,
and. But he doesn't seem to be that concerned. Like, he just kind of pops up and it's just like, hey, how about now? And then she goes, no. And then he just leaves and he goes on some other misadventure. Like, it's not like he's actually trying to earn will with her, like goodwill with her. Like, it's just like, how about now? No? Okay, cool. I'll see you in a decade.
Well, he has no idea. He's still trapped in that time when they were 8 years old and she just crawled into bed with him. So it, that fucks you up. Trust me. Yeah. Man, I don't want to get into that. That's
you know, I almost watched it again this past week just for research, and then I almost got there and I was just like, I'm not gonna do it. I don't want to do this.
Yeah. What's with the feather at the beginning? Is it supposed to like represent him?
Yeah, it's like a visual metaphor. Okay. For right. like him being carried on the wind and landing wherever he may. That Yeah.
And what rich guy, I don't care if you ran across the country in those shoes, what fucking rich dude's gonna wear those? Seriously.
Well, that's the thing, is like that's the other problem too with it, is like he doesn't seem to appreciate anything that happens for him. Like he's becomes like a billionaire, right? Like never mind. I'm just going to leave that all behind. Like, he doesn't seem to do anything well with it. Like, and again, he got rich because he wiped out an industry by accident and took advantage of it. And so it's like everything, all of the ends, like, there are no means to get there. And then, right. And then he has nothing to do after that.
Maybe it's a metaphor for a loving God. If you were dumb enough and followed me,
I was waiting for it.
Good things will happen.
Well, that, I mean, this movie is always kind of pegged as like a conservative movie. Right. And it makes sense because it's kind of like, keep your head down, don't question anything, just do what your parents told you,
yeah.
And everything's going to be totally fine. And that makes sense. I mean, like, I think that there are definitely religious illusions in the movie. I mean, even when it comes to him, like, when he's running and everyone just following him blindly.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, oh, it's a symbol of something. It means a thing. So he kind of becomes a Jesus metaphor for like 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
So.
Which is about how long that metaphor can last. So it's fine.
Apparently you haven't seen the Superman movies. Did you know that Jesus is Superman and Superman is Jesus?
I did.
I've never been a fan of Superman anyway.
Look. Jesus was a black gay man in the time before AIDS. There was none of this nonsense in the Bible. It was nonstop cocksucking. Nonstop. Eat of my body. Yeah, that's what that was. I'm not interested in any other stories about him. That's the story.
I don't give a fuck what he did. He hung out with 12 other dudes all the time.
Hey, it gets cold in the desert at night.
I just really need that narrative to be pushed, because I'm pretty sure that's closer to the truth, and it's either going to make Christians less homophobic or make them reject Christianity altogether. Either way, I win.
Yeah, amen to that, dude. Amen to that. Yeah, fucking morons.
So, problems with Forrest Gump. It's a pandering movie. It punishes anybody that has any sort of free will, any sort of motivation, any sort of passion. It's a metaphor for the conservative dream. It's misogynistic. I think your hate's pretty justified here for Forrest
Gump. Yeah, it's founded for sure.
Awesome, thanks.
I mean, it's absolutely fucking ridiculous. Like, the way you just broke that all down, it's like, dude, fuck that movie, man. It's a bleak, fucking sad, nonsensical fucking mess.
And if it makes you feel good, in this day and age, you might want to take another look at your life and, you know.
Well, you might want to go get an IQ test, because you might be as dumb as fucking Forrest Gump.
Well, and if you can't run, make sure that, because you have a disability, just remember that if you just power through that disability, you'll just miraculously get over it. Yeah.
Abandon your meds.
Abandon your meds and get on illegal ones.
There you go.
That would have been a more fun movie.
Yeah, that would have been a good
like
Jenny
he trip. Gets addicted to drugs. Like, I want to see that Forrest Gump movie, dude. Like, that is way more
just
interesting.
Strung out Forrest Gump, totally. And Jenny's trying to save him.
Yeah, and like 2 hours of like it could fucking let Quentin Tarantino direct it. It takes place in one room, and like the dealer comes in, Jenny comes. It would be great. I'd watch that movie.
It's just a real time of him detoxing in isolation.
That is an interesting movie. He would win an Oscar for that.
Mama always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get because they don't mix it all the same anymore. Sometimes it has fentanyl in it and you go to sleep for 2 days.
Sometimes you don't wake up at all.
Lieutenant Dan's dick doesn't work anymore. It turned black and fall off when he run out of veins to shoot in.
That's another really creepy scene when they're trying to bang the two girls on New Year's. Like, that is always, like, just a really uncomfortable scene to watch.
Yeah, the movie's weird about sex.
Yeah.
It's a real, like, because it's just, it's Forrest making the weird sex sounds when he's a kid, and then there's him prematurely ejaculating.
It's, like, very shame, like, it shames, like, it's totally a fucking conservative, like, it totally shames the shit out of that kind of stuff. Which, I mean, I don't condone 8-year-olds sleeping in a bed together. Whatever, but like it just fucking shames everything else that's like should be normal.
Mm-hmm. Mama always said I should ejaculate immediately upon being touched because it makes me a good boy.
And then he gets in a fight at a fucking Black Panther rally. I mean, there's other shit in that movie that's just like. It's so fucked.
Well, so like I was just talking about how like, so do you remember this? And then it just like takes away the value from stuff like John Lennon or whatever. Like the scene where they're doing the protest to go to the white school and he's just like walks in and doesn't care. And like, that's a really meaningful thing. The fact that like there would be like white people standing by black people making a statement.
But it negates everything because he's too stupid to realize.
He doesn't understand the weight of his actions, so it's completely pointless.
Although that, I take back what I said before, that is the best, that's the best line in the movie. He's like, when they're like, the dude's like, says something about coons, and he's like, well, when raccoons come up on the porch, mama just chase them off with a broom. Like, that is a great line, dude.
I also like when he says, like, they want to go to school with us. Like, <it's> just...
Yeah.
Like, he knows how stupid he and everyone else is at that moment. Like, that's maybe his most clear moment.
And was it, like, 45 minutes into the movie? Mm-hmm.
So, if there's one good thing Forrest Gump has taught us, is that you can be too stupid to be racist.
it's a curve. So once you get back down to the bottom, then.
So it's like, so 75 must be the cutoff. So we got to say, like, Donald Trump's like, what, a 76 IQ? Like, I'm only giving him a point above Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. That's fine with
just
me.
Like one point.
I do.
Is that the curve, Jeremy?
It must be.
I do feel like this movie played into, like, George Bush being elected. It feels weirdly like a movie about Bush.
Yeah.
That doesn't, yeah, wow. Totally, man.
Right? Even just, like, his folksy endearingness, where it's just like, oh, look how quaint he is. So you want to have a beer with that guy. It's like, no, you don't want that. You don't want that as your president. I don't want to hang
fool
out with
me
president.
Once. Shame on you. Fool me twice.
There's a hurricane that befalls Louisiana. There's all sorts of awful stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah, there's. Yeah, that's very weird.
It's like how it's like the movie version of how people think Radiohead predicted 9/11. Like crazy conspiracy theorists.
I don't think Radiohead predicted shit. They just produce shitty music.
Radiohead predicted the rise of the really, really alt guy with an acoustic guitar at a party. Because anybody can play Radiohead. So it's just, you get the really, really creepy guy who's just ugly in every way, but he's a creep.
Oh, and he's a weirdo. Guys.
And he's going to get you to come back to his room and listen to it. So
I just want to scream a name right now, and I'm not going to do it, but I want to so bad.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about, I'm sure.
Probably. Probably. All right. So it does have value if you are crazy. So we'll keep that in mind. Yeah. So definitely your hate is justified. John, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show this week and sharing your hatred with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll this will have to happen again, because I'm sure there's another movie the three of us can be like, fuck that.
Yeah. Also want to give a shout out to Milky Way Recordings, is where we record the podcast each and every week. For more information, you can email them, milkywayrecordings@gmail.com. Our logo is done by Sarah Holmes. Sam Holmes.
She's actually been in John's work before.
Yep.
Yeah.
See, it was my turn to fuck up this week, Jordan. It was my turn. See, this is what happens when I don't bring up the notes. It's like, oh, her name is right here. Well, it starts with an S. Well,
okay. I'll roll with it.
Yeah, it's on the Instagram at Sam Holmes. We are on the Lousy Weather Media Network.
Officially.
Officially on Audio Boom. So you can check out all their other podcasts they have on the network, especially the Chris Klemm Cavs Cast, if you love the sports as much as I do.
Can I ask John a question real quick?
Yeah.
You got anything coming up that you...
Yeah, but...
I know you're working on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, nothing I can, like, officially talk about, but we have our first full-length movie done that we just finished.
You finally finished it?
It's finally done, yeah, but man. It's like, I can't talk about it until it's, like, you know, marketing and press and stuff, yeah.
I'll shout out, look up Turnstile Films' Onlooker. I loved it, dude.
Oh, thank you.
I loved it.
I appreciate
like,
it.
Like, everything about it. I made, like, four people watch it. I was like, this is fucking great, dude.
Oh, man. See, I feel like it's just, like, I wouldn't want to even do that, even though it's my own movie, because I'd just be like, oh, God, this isn't about me. It's about a creepy character.
No, it's all very autobiographical. John is a weirdo, and he's a creep.
Yeah.
No, I love you.
What the hell are you doing here?
Yeah, you can't hang out with us. We're not weirdos or creeps.
I don't belong here.
I'll take my acoustic guitar and hit on a girl.
Oh, wait, it's just John. Like, you bring it, like, you guys didn't want me to play the acoustic.
But it's right here.
I mean, it's right here. You guys want it? I wrote it today.
Mama sends end the podcast now.